Nobody did. Uh-huh. Maybe there's a lesson right there. Just a thought. Okay. So how do we activate missional volunteers? Because the whole point of this is we want to be focused on mission. A lot of people are active, but are they focused on where you want to go? So here is the key. Let me ask you a question. How many of you, how many full-time ministers are there in the room? By a show of hands. Two of you. Okay. Three of you. Okay. All right. We just did a session before about missionaries. Do you remember that story? And who are the missionaries? Everybody's a missionary. We're all, okay. How many ministers are there in the room? Every one of us is a minister. If you work for Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola doesn't know it, but God has placed you there as a missionary in Coca-Cola. If you're a teacher, God has placed you as a teacher in the school. Which is the best way to reach teachers for Christ? Through another teacher. What's the best way to reach a policeman? Through another policeman. Ho ho. Ah, let's do it just for the sake of it. How many full-time ministers do we have in the room? Yeah. We're all in ministry. Wow. So it's a matter of not how do we do it better? Okay. I love to tell this. I'm going to tell that all the time. If I had a jigsaw puzzle, I don't travel with one, but if I had a jigsaw puzzle, how many of you like doing puzzles? Okay. I don't. If I ever put it together, I glue it. My wife, on the other hand, loves jigsaw puzzles. There's always one in there going. So, in a sense, a jigsaw puzzle is rather like the vision that God gives the church. You go to a store, and I go with my wife, and look at all the pictures on the boxes. And the picture on the box is not the jigsaw puzzle. It's a picture of what the jigsaw puzzle could be. It's a vision. Yeah. And so, God has done the same thing. He has created this church for the 5 years ago, 10 years, 20 years ago, with a purpose for this church. And so number one thing is, we buy the jigsaw puzzle because we have bought into the vision. Everything is driven by vision. Everything's driven by vision in the kingdom. The people that carried the guy to Jesus were driven by what? A vision that they could make a difference, that this guy could be well. And that's why they gave of their time. So the box is a vision. So you take the box and you take it home and you open the box, and you've got this vision. This is a potential. But what God does, if you rattle the box, inside the box are all the pieces needed to fulfill that vision. All the pieces you need for the jigsaw are there. In this church, in you, are all the resources that are needed, in gifts, in abilities, in money, in finance, in everything. All the pieces God needs, God has placed in this church. So you've got a vision, but you've also got the pieces. But they're not put together. The guy at the checkout counter doesn't say, "Excuse me, sir, I have to put it together before I can sell it to you." That would defeat the whole purpose, wouldn't it? The point is, we have to put it together ourselves. Let me ask you another question. When you're doing a jigsaw, how many of you do the corners first? That's right. There you go. But once a jigsaw puzzle is put together, how many of you say, "Oh, what lovely corners"? But you see, God has placed in the church gifts, evangelists, pastors, teachers. They are the corners of the church, like David, like Charlie. They're the corners. But once the jigsaw is put together, their gift is no different than yours. How many of you have put together a jigsaw with a piece missing? There you go. Isn't that incredibly frustrating? When we hold back our gift, when we don't want to volunteer, we don't want to get involved, when we resist the Holy Spirit, our piece is missing. Let me give you another final illustration. If you put a jigsaw together, and you see the picture, see the box, this is what it could have been, and you sit back, my wife does this, with a sense of satisfaction, "I did it, yes. I get no satisfaction whatsoever from it, but she does. And she sits back and she looks at it for usually a day to feel good about it. She did it. Which is the way it's going to be with you and us when we contribute and we become part of this vision and we put our piece out there with everybody else. Together, we can do what we could never do on our own. A good jigsaw, my dad taught me, because he used to cut out jigsaws. If you catch a jigsaw and you pull it off the table and you hold it up, how many of you have done that? Yeah. And a good jigsaw is cut in such a way that the helmet holds together. That's what the body of Christ is about. I am committed to you. You are committed to me. Our gifts are not, we're going to pull out. We're here in this relationship for the long term. And I need you and you need me. If I'm not there, you fall. We need each other. That's why volunteering, and this is what the topic is so crucial. Because that's what it's all about. Putting our gift on the table for the good of the kingdom. To fulfill not our vision or this church's vision, but God's vision for this church. I think it's pretty cool. I want to give you a quote. It's a little long, but I'm still going to read it. Bill Perkins wrote this. It's called Awaken the Leader Within You. And please listen to this. In just 3.5 years, Jesus established a movement that lasted 20 centuries and inspired billions of people. Jesus did it without traveling far from home, writing a book, leading an army, or holding a political office. How did one man so significantly influence the world? He did it by personally training individuals and utilizing techniques we can study, practice, and eventually master. His strategy wasn't a result of a lucky toss of the dice, but of a well-thought-out plan by a man of sterling character, finely honed leadership skills. He didn't succeed because he recruited a team of superstars, but because he passed on to his team the character traits and skills they in turn would need to pass on to others. I love the story of Peter because it gives me hope. If God can use Peter, he can use someone like me. In the book of Nehemiah, the wonderful book of leadership, by the way, and it's worth a whole study in itself. And in fact, I've done that, but this is not what the point here. But I just want you to see the key role that volunteering and working with others was crucial to the success of the building in Jerusalem. First of all, Nehemiah starts because he hears about the tragedy of the city in disgrace, and he starts to cry. And we need to be so passionate about our vision. That we're here to make a difference. It's not about me. And he prayed and he fasted. In other words, the task mattered. When the task matters to you, then it's going to happen. The vision was inspiring. And then notice from reading this, he chose people to work with him because of their character and spiritual depth. It says, I put in charge, and then man of integrity, feared God. So, character traits, he didn't delegate to anybody. He delegated to people who were godly and had spiritual depth. And then he gave them clear direction and expectations. He said to them, the gates of Jerusalem are not to be opened. And he told them exactly what needed to be done with detail. Then he delegated the authority to them. He appointed them to them. He appointed, and in appointing, he gives them authority to carry out their task. And then he says, some resident of Jerusalem as guards, some at their posts, some near their own houses. Each of them had a different job description. The CEO, Southwest Airlines, how many of you travel WestJet? Anybody? I travel WestJet. Actually, it's a pretty good airline. It actually is a great airline. But it was formed based on this one from Southwest. And this is secular statement, but look at this. We're not looking for blind obedience. We're looking for people who on their own initiative, want to be doing what they're doing because they're considered a worthy objective. You see that? Everything's driven by vision and mission. I have always believed that the best leaders are the best servers. Isn't that a Christ-centered teaching? And if you're a servant, by definition, you're not controlling. So we're seeing, I'm taking you here on a little journey where we're seeing the need for volunteers and try to follow this along. I'm going to skip this one. But the world is changing inside the church. And so here are some issues. How many of you identify with this? People don't have the time. They're busier than ever. How many agree with that? Yeah, they are. I mean, they've just got to be home to see American Idol. People don't have the interest. Don't have the interest. Lots of other things pulling for their attention. How many agree with that? Yeah, it's true, isn't it? People have other priorities today. We have more money and stuff than ever. People don't have the need. The church is no longer the center of community life. So we're seeing a list here of issues that are the reality. In fact, the scouts are having the same problems the church is having in recruiting people. Volunteerism overall is down. This is a picture of me when I wear my old glasses. Quite accurate, isn't it? There was a guy that was farming. In this was in Africa, and he had the old type of plow, and it was being pulled by a donkey. The donkey had blinders on, and the guy was yelling, "Come on, Mark, pull harder. Come on, Joe, pull harder. Pull harder, Mary and Matthew. Keep pulling, Bob. Keep pulling, John." Finally, the guy watching this says to him, "How many names does that donkey have? You've only got the one donkey." "Oh, his name is Bob, but if he thinks others are pulling with him, he pulls harder." But the truth is, we do work better when we work with others. Okay. The church is not alone, I mentioned that. All sorts of institutions are having trouble getting people. I was on a flight just a couple of years ago, and I read this in the Globe and Mail. Malcolm Gladwin, how many of you read Blink and Tipping Points and Outliers? And okay, anybody read any of those books? Okay. Oh, you have. Good, good, good. Yeah. Makes you think, doesn't it? Okay. And he had this quote. I thought it was pretty good. "The idea that you decide whether someone is a good fit or a bad fit for your organization at point zero is going to have to be thrown out the window, because you're not going to be able to find somebody with those credentials. You're going to have to create internal structures that will help people grow into positions. That's really where the real opportunity is going to be." Not only is he right, Jesus taught that by example. None of the people qualify. If you want volunteers, we've got to start growing them. But the good news is, and this is a Barna quote, I think this is wonderful news. It says, George Gallup, I incriminated the wrong person. George Gallup took a survey and discovered that only 10% of American church members are active in their kind of personal ministry. But he also discovered that 40% of all members have expressed an interest in having a ministry, and they would like to be involved in ministry, but they have never been asked, and they don't know how. I believe that is certainly true in Canada. Most people would be involved if somebody actually asked them and told them how. They're terrified of getting involved because they don't know how, what's expected of them. And we're not famous for letting people know. Well, I'm debating. Tell me again time. I'm just trying to pace myself here. 11:30 or so. Okay. Oh, goodness. We've got plenty of time. Okay. Good, good. And again, stop me anytime you want. I'm actually going somewhere with this, just so you, in case you want to know. How many of you have read the book Good to Great, Jim Collins? Okay. Anyway, I'm into business books, okay? Just so you know, I read those too. And he says this, he did a study of all the successful companies in the United States, in fact, in the world, I think, and he came up with these leadership things about good leaders today. What good do great leaders do? I guess that's right. They first got the right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus, and the right people in the right seats, and then they figured out where to drive it. We have trouble with the wrong people, don't we? Getting them off the bus. Let's sing now. I love the quote. I saw this on a printer, the printing company. It had a quote: "Employees not fired with enthusiasm will be fired with enthusiasm." Okay. So how do we delegate? In light of all of this, how do we delegate? I'd like to spend the next while in Exodus 18. Exodus 18, I have found a model that I came up with many years ago. I'm sure other people have done it too, but I remember the day that it hit me. I was in prayer. I was frustrated. I was not getting enough volunteers to do what needed to be done. And I thought, how can they not be getting it? And as I was praying in the sanctuary, walking up and down in prayer, God led me to the scripture, and this is what I've got, and this is what I'm going to pass on to you. So, let's go. Exodus 18. It's a story where Jethro meets Moses, and Moses is a successful leader. He's brought the people out of Israel. You know, he's a powerful, big, godly man, people of God, following God, great times for Israel. And then he says, Jethro is talking to Moses, "That will make your load lighter, because they will share it with you. And if you do this, and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain, and all these people will go home satisfied." So what Jethro is about to tell him about delegation, which is what this is about volunteers, which is what this is about, is that if you do this, you will not burn out, and everybody that's needs are not being met now will all be met, and the people that are meeting the needs will be satisfied. They're going to be fulfilled. This is a win-win. Isn't that something? Win-win. Huh. Good. So how do we do it? I have a bunch of things. Number one, we need to delegate. We need to learn to delegate when we are successful. Most churches do it when they're desperate. That's the wrong time to delegate. You want to delegate when everything's going well. You want to set up things and train people when everything's going well. So Jethro was delighted to hear about all the good things the Lord had done. So this is, the ministry is doing really well. The church is flourishing under Moses, if you will. Just really exciting. So delegation is when you're successful. It's not a weakness to give away the ministry to others. In fact, it's a sign of maturity and strength. And we need to delegate as part of a strategy and part of a plan, and not out of necessity. Okay, I'm trying to make sure we get that point. I don't know how you guys have done, Charles, but I once burnt out. I burnt out. I remember I was pastoring this church. It had about 1,200, probably 2,500 people considered at home. The church was doing supposedly very well. And I got home one night, and there were no conflicts. There was nobody leaving the church, nobody trying to shoot me, feeding me arsenic. And I remember getting home one evening, and I sat in my big comfortable chair at home, and suddenly I started to cry. My wife was sitting over there, I was just having a good conversation with her. And suddenly I started to cry for no reason. And I don't cry. My dad, big military guy, he's taught me that real men don't cry. Don't eat quiche, don't do aerobics. Okay. So I didn't cry. I'm not a crier. And I'm sitting in this big overstuffed sofa, and suddenly I start blubbering. And I feel like I'm a string that's taut, like made of catgut, and suddenly it starts to unravel. And I'm sitting there just crying, and my wife's shocked because she's never seen me do that. Blubbering. And I cried for hours. And ultimately my wife didn't know what to do, and I didn't know what was wrong. It was just crazy. And what had happened was that I hadn't learned to delegate properly. I was delegating, but not properly. And I was trying to do it all. I was trying to be the super pastor or super minister, super director of Sunday school, super home group, whatever super you think you want to be. And I realized that I was doing it all myself, and I couldn't take it. My wife plays the guitar, and One time when we moved a ton of times. When we opened the guitar case, the bottom part of the guitar had come unstuck, and all the strings had pulled it off. And that's what happened to me. I let them taunt for too long until finally they couldn't take it anymore and it snapped. It took me 3 or 4 months to recover. I couldn't pray, couldn't read my Bible, couldn't think, couldn't make decisions. I have a good friend called Murray Mormon. You might know Murray. You know of Murray. Good here in Vancouver, godly leader. And he had the same thing. He said he was at a traffic light one day, and suddenly he cracked, started crying. The lights kept changing, and he didn't know which one was go. He's a smart man, got a doctorate and everything. There the lights changing, he had no idea. You don't want that to happen to you. We've got to learn to give the ministry away. And we've got to do it when we don't need to do it, is my point. So let me show you another reason for delegation. If I had a plate, well, let me borrow this plate here. Okay. If you had, I'm going to get you involved. You don't mind, do you? Okay. Will you stand here? Why not? You look pretty. It'll add to the presentation. Okay. You do the banner white. That's exactly what you do. Oh no! Oh, absolutely! Oh, absolutely! That's right. Yeah. And you will win this. Come on down. This is deteriorating really fast. Okay, here I have a plate. And imagine that you had a big bag of rice. Okay? So the idea is you're going to pour it out of the bag onto the plate. So if you did, pretend you do. Oh, how well you do. Oh, you drop some. Okay. Pour it out. How would you know when you filled it to the max?
When stuff started falling.
Okay. And what would the rice look like on the plate, do you think? Looked like a cone, wouldn't it? Now, if you decided that you wanted to put more rice on here, and you kept pouring, what would happen?
It just fall.
Keep falling off. And if you wanted to put more on and you kept pouring, it would keep falling off. And it would keep falling off. How could we possibly get more rice on this plate? Okay, but that wouldn't be more rice on the plate. You'd be replacing it.
Oh, that's true.
Hmm. Good point. Good point, eh? You see, the truth is you can't. The only way to have more rice in my hand would be to get a bigger plate. Right? Because the amount of rice that this can hold is determined by the size of the plate. It's exactly the same with leadership. You can only have so many people. The church will only grow as large as your leadership base. If this is all you've got, this is all you'll ever have. And you'll get losing as much as you're gaining. And I see churches all the time that are gaining and losing. And that's because they haven't learned to delegate and build a leadership base. Thank you so much, Vanna White. Okay. So we see we need to do it before we need to do it is the whole point. Okay, let's go to second. We need to pray first. How about that for dramatic? Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering. So this is the equivalent of prayer. And other sacrifices to God and Aaron. So they take a moment to seek God. Okay? We need to pray. We need to pray. You need to pray people into leadership. Pray specifically for who you want and what position and what qualifications you want them to have. And, you know, with the right attitude and teachable spirit and all of those things. And we need to, here are some of the things we want to pray for. We need to pray for a servant's heart. Okay? And then here is another quote. So here are a bunch of good scriptures for you. I'm just trying to pace myself with a clock here, just so. So, anyway, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. So we need to pray for the right people to come in with the right heart. Okay. Well, we're going to cover this in a few moments in more detail, but I just want you to know up front that that's where we're going. Here's a great quote by Robert Coleman about how Jesus delegated. Contrary to what one might expect, as the ministry of Christ lengthened into the second or third year, he gave increasingly more time to the chosen disciples, not less. So we need to be delegating to people that we're building into, so that each and every one of us is growing and increasing our capacity. Number three, we need to evaluate regularly. I can't stress this enough. We should be evaluating everything every 3 months. I think that's healthy, frankly. Here in Exodus 18, verse 13, it says, the next day Moses took a seat to serve as judge for the people. And he stood around him, and they stood around him from morning till evening. And then when his father-in-law saw, he was checking him out. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, what is it that you're doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as a judge while all these people stand around you from morning till evening? So take a moment. Don't you realize what's really happening here, getting an outside perspective, a different evaluation? So here are some of the questions that come to my mind. What is your situation today as you look at your ministry, whatever it might be? Where are you at right now? Second question is, what is it that you could delegate that you're doing now that you don't need to be doing? Another question is, can you stop doing? Another good question is, why are you doing this? Why in the world are you doing this? Or how can you do it better? I pastored in Chilliwack, and one of my biggest frustrations was that when I came there, the church started growing. It was very exciting. But suddenly, I found a lot of new people were coming, and they were not staying. It was a Mennonite church, Mennonite Brethren Church. Some of you have Mennonite background, I bet. Yep, that's right. And you know that the Mennonite game, where everybody finds out who you're related to because you're all related to somebody somewhere. And so I was finding that the families were not staying, the new families, and it was frustrating me no end. I tried to say, well, we're not being friendly enough, so I would get everyone to smile and brush their teeth more. And, you know, I'd put salespeople on the door, and it didn't work. They weren't staying, and it drove me nuts until one day I was praying. I said, God, you know, try to evaluate. I was just saying, you know, what is it? What is the issue? Because we need to know. We've got to evaluate. What is the issue? And one day I went into this dear Mennonite's home, and they had a picture on the wall. It was a typical Mennonite picture. It was a tractor with a great-great-grandfather and a great-great-grandmother sitting on the tractor. And underneath them were their 14 children, and each of them's 14 children, and each of them's 14 children. And the picture was like taken with a zoom lens from a satellite. And I suddenly realized what the problem was. The problem wasn't that they weren't friendly. They were the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. It's just that you could never be their friend. Because they were related to so many people. They didn't have time to visit with their great children and great grandchildren, let alone to include you now in their group. And every one of us has empty hooks. Maybe a person with very relation has 24. Most of us probably have a dozen hooks of people that we can get to know well. And these people's hooks were all full. So the new people coming to the community came to the church looking for people to get to know them. And these people were friendly to them, but they would never become their friends, so they would go somewhere else. But it only happened because you take the time to stop and say, okay, God, what is the issue? Evaluate. The solution, by the way, do you want to know what the solution was? Okay. The solution was that we get the new people who were new last month to meet with the new people who are new this month. And we put them together intentionally, having lunches for them and starting home groups with none of the old people in it. And they were all looking for relationships, so they became friends and they stayed. Ha ha! Yeah.
But what's the solution for people that have their books full? What do you tell them? Well,
I just wish them God's blessing.
What if they're all people who are saved and have known the Lord for many years?
They are. They've known forever. Forever and forever. They know Jesus on a personal basis. No, I know. But we're going to cover that later on, too. No, they're wonderful people. But they're not the ones that are going to help minister to this church. And they can do other things. They can teach a Sunday school class or something. Do you follow me? That doesn't mean that they don't have gifts and they can't be used. Yeah.
I think Austin's asking, should they feel guilty for having their hooks, they cut off some relationships that they have?
No, they shouldn't. But they should certainly find places to serve, whatever that might be. But the whole point was, was, that unless you stop and evaluate, you don't see it. And so we need to stop and evaluate. Like, that's really important. Back to that Socrates statement, you know, an unexamined life's not worth living. So am I investing in something that makes a difference for the long term? Then those are all issues of itself. I love the story of when I was a kid in South America, when there was food in the stores, when there was food in the stores. They would sometimes do can stacking. You know, they don't do that here. But they would get cans of peas, say, and they would do a big circle, and then they would stack them up like a pyramid. You could probably kill a good couple of kids, but but they would do that. And then at the top, they'd put, you know, 2 for 25 cents or whatever the price was. And so the story is of this guy that's been all day doing this, stacking these cans, and he's on a ladder, and he's putting the last can on the top after working all day, and an old lady comes along with a buggy. Squeak, 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 sees a 2, 2 for 7, takes the cans. He gets off the ladder, slaps the lady, and says, "You don't ruin my display." We can forget why we're doing what we're doing. Okay, we need to evaluate regularly. Am I remembering what I'm about? Okay, here goes. Number 4. We mustn't be threatened. Delegation, we mustn't be threatened. Moses answered him, "Because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them." Doesn't he sound important? I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, I'm the guy who does this. The church I attend, one of the great things about it is that they have a policy. And the policy is that you hold all ministry lightly. Yeah. Huh. And one of their policies is that we try to get new people involved in serving as soon as possible. So there are a number of ministries, like ushering or greeting, where the people that are leading it are told, if we have somebody new, we're going to bump you, and you have to be okay with that. So they'll come on Sunday and say, "Here's Bob, he's new to the church, we'd love him to greet." And so Fred, who's a humble servant, says, "Absolutely, let him serve."
Beautiful.
Making you think. Not threatened. Not Superman. The problem with many of us is we need to be needed. It's a disease. Huh. You know, we want to be in total control. Not you, of course. I love Calvin and Hobbes. It was the guy was holding a watering can over a flower and saying to the flower, "I control the water. You would die without me. Ha, ha, ha." And at that moment, it rains. We don't control anything, do we? Okay, number 5. Burnout can be avoided. Verse 17, it says, Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you are doing is not good. The church is growing. The people are coming to him. Their needs are being met. He's been the greatest leader they've ever had. And yet the father-in-law says, what you're doing is not good." Hello? You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. What do you mean, Jethro? Shut up. I built this church. I'm it. Huh. I'm the most popular leader they've ever had. I'm on the 700 Club. Now. So we see that burnout can be avoided. Whenever I pastor, I immediately get people to do counseling. I hate counseling. Don't come to me. I'll probably tell you to get a life. It cut my counseling load down big time. Or when they come to me and I yell, "You did what?" No, I don't. So I immediately get other people who know what they're doing and have the gift, and I give all the counseling to intelligent people who can do stuff like that. I don't do that. So I'm always training counselors. I love training counselors. Let them do it. Okay. Number 6 is delegation number 6. Your role might have to change. We're going to take the church to the next level in volunteerism and delegation. Maybe your role will have to change. Now listen to me, Jethro says, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative of God and bring their disputes to him. The need for change. There's a lot of things to talk about here. For example, the difference between managers and leaders. Managers do the right things. Managers do things right. Leaders do the right things. Managers are interested in efficiency. Leaders are interested in effectiveness. Very important difference. Managers administer. Leaders look for innovation. They want to do better. Managers maintain. Leaders develop. Managers focus on systems and structures. Leaders focus on people. It's all about people. Managers rely on control. Leaders rely on trust. I'll give you a couple more. Managers organize and staff. Leaders align people with a direction, mission, vision, right? Finally, well, let's finish here. Managers have a short-term view. Leaders have a long-term view. What difference are we going to make in the big picture? I'm going to skip this one. And Ephesians 4:18, 11 to 13, tells us, and we need to see this. I'm giving you stuff you know, but we're going to go somewhere. To lunch is where we're going. So the middle of the verse, Ephesians 4, let me read it right from the beginning. I apologize. I'm trying to be fast and I'm being slower. It's when you improve the system that you take longer.
It was he who gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, some to be pastors and teachers.
What for? To prepare God's people for works of service, so the body of Christ may be built up. We want the body of Christ to be built up. We've got to be delegating and training and releasing and empowering people. Isn't that exciting? We want people that are fat, which I qualify. Fat stands for faithful, available, and teachable. The people we want to have doing anything and everything in the church need to be faithful. And these things you have heard me say in the presence of many women, entrust to reliable people. Reliable, faithful. Be available. Jesus said to them, let the dead bury. That is a passage that means a ton to me. That one about being available. Let the dead bury their own dead. But you go and proclaim the kingdom of God. Be alive. I'm going to talk about that later. And then finally, teachable. You know, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. People that know it all, you don't want them. Right? So, any questions before I move on? Are we covering anything that we're getting in somewhere? Any questions at all? Okay. We're doing all right? Okay. Okay. So how do you find people? Where do you find fresh blood? We often want to be like Dracula. With the fresh blood. How many of you have heard of the network program by Willow Creek? Anyone? Did you ever use that here? No? Okay. You don't have to. A network is, what's good about it, it helps people find their spiritual gift. But what's good about it is that they have two things are good about it. The first is that they also help you discover your passions, because there are a lot of things you're able to do, but there are certain things that really make you excited about life, and doing those are what you really want. You don't want things you're capable of doing. You know, you might be an accountant during the day, but you might be passionate about prayer or something, right? Okay. And the second thing that they do that's really clever is that they interview everyone after you found out the gifts, and they plug you in immediately into actually somewhere where you begin to serve right away. It's very clever. Those two things are really clever. So I've used it many times. Through your leaders, they can recommend someone. How else? Anyone want to make a comment about how you volunteered for something, or how you get volunteers for something, or anyone want to make any comments?
Come on, how do we get volunteers for Sunday school?
Okay, same old people doing the same old thing. Okay. Well. Okay, all right, very good. Sorry? You know, that was, okay. Well, that was, I was an executive with Amex, and when I left
corporate world where I could fire people. And all of a sudden, I was now a pastor and nobody needed to do anything. I had to turn everything around and learn to lead from a totally different perspective. Because nobody has to do anything. But if they catch the vision, and if they see the difference, and they sense the fulfillment that comes from using their gift, my goodness, they will climb the biggest mountain. You couldn't pay them enough money to do that. And they will go to Zimbabwe, won't they? Or they'll go to some place that they never go in because God has got their heart. Wow.
I think people need to know they're using their own.
And it's rewarded. Yes. It's rewarded. Yeah. One of the big issues, you probably remember with the Japanese after the Second World War, their economy was terrible. And they ended up hearing a guy called Dennings. You know the story? Dennings was an American who came up with a new idea for companies. And the new idea was simply this: give the workers, the people on the ground, the ability to come up with new ideas and reward them for it. And so people on the assembly line in Japan would find new ways of, suggest new ways of making it cheaper, making it quicker, making the design better. And they were applied, they were rewarded for it. While the big companies in the U.S. at that time, Ford, GM and such, decided, no, all innovation has to come from the top down. And look what's happened to the auto industry. And it was an American that came up with the idea. We've got to have creativity on the ground. It's people in the pew that are able to give us the good ideas. Are you all still with me? Okay, let's keep going. So, I have here what I've come up with, and this is where I'm going to spend the rest of my time, a 7-step process for responsible delegation. And this is what happened in that when I was praying at the front of the church that day, and this is what I saw. Exodus 18:20 says, so Jethro tells Moses, you know, you've got to delegate, and this is how you do it. Teach them the decrees and laws, show them the way to live, and the duties they are to perform. Then he says, select capable men and women from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy, men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials of 1,000, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you. The simple cases they can decide themselves. And I see it like this. I see that delegation starts in that top left corner with prepare. How do you prepare the people? You need to, if you're going to prepare someone to minister effectively, you need to teach them what it is to do it, how to do it, things, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Servant's heart, all of that. Then you need to show them Jesus walked with people and they watched him minister and he then told them to do what he was doing. And then we need to tell them the duties, what exactly is expected of them. And then in the top right-hand corner, we have choose. What kind of people you get? Choose. Capable people. Capable in whatever area you're calling them to. That fear God, that have a vital living relationship with Jesus. And trustworthy. God always promotes through faithfulness. And then, finally, in the bottom, it's organize. Organize around appointing over 10, over 50s, and over hundreds. I'd like to go through this. Can I? Here's the plan. So first of all, we need to teach. So how do we prepare people? So here are things that we need to do. Now, a lot of churches don't do the teaching. They assume you know what's expected of you, and we end up with frustrated people. I remember when I pastored a church, I was a young pastor at the time, and I decided that we needed a friendly usher on the door. So I obviously don't learn from my mistakes. I got a salesman who smiled at everything that moved. He used to smile at dogs. And I put him on the door and I said, would you mind being the usher? Because to that moment, the people that greeted at the door in that church were the elders and their wives. Most of them were nice people, but they looked like they'd been baptized in lemon juice. They were, you know, they were friendly and nice, but they were timid and they looked angry.
They were nice people once you got to know them, but if you were new, you wouldn't go anywhere near. You'd stay clear of these people. You thought they'd have a taser in their back pocket. So I put this guy that was friendly on the door. And I was all excited. And then one day I look down and I see him. He's talking to his golf buddy about golf, handing out bulletins, ignoring the new people coming in. And I got really mad. I got really hopping mad. I thought, this is ridiculous. He's ignoring the people we called. You know, I didn't swear and curse, but wherever I spat, grass never grew again. And I was about to get mad at him until the Holy Spirit convicted me and said, David, he's not the problem. You are the problem. And I said, how come? And God said to me, you never told him why he was doing it, what was expected of him. He's doing the best he knows how because you didn't give leadership. I repented and lit candles. I'm in trouble. Okay. So how do we do this? We need to teach people before they serve in any capacity. We need to teach them. Why are you doing this? The person who prepares a coffee. Do you do coffee on Sunday mornings? The person who prepares a coffee needs to know that the ministry is not about coffee. It has nothing to do about coffee whatsoever. It's got to be the fact that somebody's going to come through those doors who's probably had a bad experience with church, who's probably cynical, probably not believers for sure, and they're coming probably because a friend invited them and they felt obliged to come, and they're expecting you to be judgmental, they're expecting you to ignore them, you're expecting you to just get into your little ghettos and leave them alone, and they're expecting to be offended and to be confirmed in their idea that church is irrelevant. They're going to come through those doors. Cynics. When they come through the door and somebody says, hey, would you like a coffee? Here it is. What would you take in your coffee? And talks to them. All of a sudden, that stereotype of Christians vanishes because they met somebody who's serving them in Jesus' name. And if later on they come to Christ, I'll tell you, that coffee played a role in that conversion. It's not about coffee. It's about Jesus being Jesus on the door. But if we don't trace everything back to our vision, everything back to Scripture, then people are just doing a job. And they could be working at Starbucks as a barista. But that's not a barista thing. This is about Jesus. So I'm telling you something that's really important. We need to teach. Why are they doing this? How does this tie into the mission of the church? Daycare or whatever it is that you're doing. So often, you know, our leadership in churches, where we believe in mushroom leadership. We throw them into the dark. We throw manure on them. When they get big enough, we cut off their heads. We need to teach vision. What is the goal? What are we expecting? If you're a Sunday school class, like, what is the idea? Are we just going to look after, babysit the kids, or are we going to turn them into disciples? The kids into disciples. Is our goal in Sunday school just look after the kids, or we're trying to teach the parents how they can be a leader in the home? Are we just about those kids, or are we about reaching other families for Christ? Am I making any sense here? We need to teach doctrine because a lot of people come from other churches with weird ideas. And if you put them in leadership too soon, they can go, woo. And then gifts, what are the gifts? Because we want them to be fulfilled. When I passed in Chilliwack, we had a caretaker that I inherited. He was Mennonite, obviously. And he was a grumpy old man. He was a really grumpy old man. They made a movie out of it. Grumpy old man, and you know, he was a caretaker. And I don't know why, I just liked the man, and I just got to know him, and grumpy old man, everything was wrong, and they'd never done it this way before, and why do you need to do that, and we've never done it, Mama. I included him in our staff meetings, and he was sit through, only three of us at the beginning, and he sat there thinking he'd never been included. And I told him that what he was doing was important, because when the house is clean, where the yard is mowed, it makes a statement to the community that people care about this church. And eventually in time, he melted and he became my best friend. And he would say something, we need to, oh, I can do that. We can do it better. And he'd give me better ideas. Okay, I don't know if I helped you with that. But the point is, everybody's got so much to contribute. But it starts with teaching them, number one. We need to constantly cast the vision, constantly cast the vision, constantly. If you're a Sunday school director, you should be casting the vision all the time to your teachers. What is this about? It's not just about looking after children. It's much bigger than that. Okay, etc. Constantly cast the vision. I think every 3 months, every leader has to cast a vision to all their people all over again. If you don't do that, you're going to end up stacking the cans and slapping the old woman when she takes a can. You'll forget why you're doing it. Second, we need to show. So number one, you've got to teach. There's got to be, they've got to have a biblical knowledge of what they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing, and how it fits into the mission of the church. Number two, you've got to show them. They've got to be discipled. I was discipled, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Jesus taught by discipling. That's how people learn to do what needs to be done. They watch. There's a whole story of a grandmother, and the fuses go in the house, and the grandmother's sitting there in the dark with her little grandson, and the grandson said, Grandma, I can change the fuses for you. So the grandmother goes downstairs, and the little boy goes to the fuse box, the grandmother holding a flashlight, and the little boy changes the fuses. The grandmother says, wow, how did you learn to do that? Oh, he said, I held the flashlight for Dad. We all learn from somebody else. We all learn from somebody else. We need to walk with someone. And discipling develops trust. I have a formula. And I've done this in every church I pastored, that nobody is allowed to minister alone. And I'll talk about it this more. I think every Sunday school teacher should have an assistant Sunday school teacher. You say to me, David, you don't know how difficult it is to find one. I'll tell you, it's easier to find two. Because capable people are busy people. And when they know that they're not going to do it all on their own, they'll say yes to something. And that way you're training another person. And when that Sunday school teacher can't go because they've got a business trip to go to, or they're going to the cottage or something, the other person fills in is not a new, he's somebody, she or he is somebody who knows the kids and knows what the class was. So there's a continuity there. Your quality of your Sunday school goes way up because you're teaching, am I making sense there? And you're training someone. So the day that plate of rice, you end up getting, suddenly God brings you lots of new families. You now have twice as many teachers as you had before. I think that ushers should have, and prayer people should have. Okay. Does that make any sense to you? It's easier to get two. Always easier. And quality people, happy to work with someone else. Okay. Biblical delegation is all about faithfulness. Okay, I'm going to zoom along. Third was preparing. So we're talking about preparing. We're talking about teaching them. So we've got to have teaching about what they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing. Then we need to show them. We've got to have a way of discipling them. Okay. And then third, what are the duties? What are the expectations? That's what Jethro told Moses. What is expected of them? Time-wise, time commitment, whatever it might be. And who are they accountable to? One of the challenges of church is that we build silos. And each silo is independent from the other, and we duplicate and we mess up. And God never created silos. We're in this together. We're like the jigsaw puzzle. We're each connected to one another, and we need to be supporting one another, and we should be working together. If you've got a silo, you've got to dismantle it. I've just made enemies of all the silo experts. Okay? What is expected? Who are they accountable to? What are the results? Like the story of that usher that I told you. I told him to be an usher. He was being an usher, but he wasn't doing what I was expecting, and I was a problem. I wasn't telling him exactly what was being expected. What are the clear guidelines? How to carry this out? And this is particularly, how long are they going to serve? How many of you have had been worked in church and it's been a prison sentence? No? And you sign up for something and they expect you
You know, basically, if you don't grumble and complain, it'll be the same people 10 years from now. Is that helping the church? Is that even helping the person? I learned very young in my ministry that you're best putting a deadline on people that serve. Will you serve till July the 1st, 3 months or whatever? Will you serve till August the 2nd? Put it in writing. And that way, the person says, oh, I can give 3 months to this. And if they're really good at it and they find fulfillment and excitement, when you come to the end of the 3 months, you say, you did a great job, Bob. Would you mind serving for another 3 months? Sure. And if they stank at it and they were terrible at it, you don't have to fire them. You can say, thank you for serving. Your time is up. I have another job for you to do. You're going to be a parking attendant. This is not rocket science. But let me tell you, if you did all the little things I'm talking about, your volunteering will guaranteed go up. People want to work with others. They want to know it's not a life sentence. How long are they going to serve? And then to serve with excellence. And obviously we're going to celebrate their successes. You know, many churches, they celebrate someone who prepares food far more than they do someone who leads someone to Christ. We've got things backwards. I think we should be happy that people prepare food. But we should be happier, the people. Okay, I'm putting you to sleep, aren't I? Okay. Oh, maybe I'm, okay. So let's keep going. And, excellence. There, 1 Corinthians 9, 24, 27. Wonderful verse. Read it on your own time. And this is really good too. It's really brilliant. Okay, let's go to choose. Let's go to choose. And choose. So here he, choose. So first, capable. We need to find people with the right gifts. Get the right people on the bus and in the right seats. All right? And you can't have high-powered team with low-talented people. Remember that effort comes down to attitude and not talent. I will take someone with a godly attitude over someone who's capable any day of the week. And personally, I remember a guy that I phoned. I was a youth pastor. Can you believe that? I was a youth pastor. And I phoned a guy up because we had a church bus and we wanted a little van. And we wanted him to pick people out of the subway and bring them to the church. And I phoned this guy up because he had the right license. And I said, would you mind driving on Sunday to bring people to the church? And he said, no, well, you know, only if there's nobody else. And I made a decision then that if they don't really want to do it, I don't want them to do it either. I'd rather find somebody else. I don't want to have people doing it for the wrong reasons. We want capable people with the right attitude. Okay. 1 Corinthians 12 is wonderful. Verse 17 through 20, brilliant. Okay. The next one, choose. People that fear God, spiritual maturity. And there are different jobs that need different levels of spiritual maturity. You can have somebody doing one thing let me explain it this way. If my watch is 20 minutes slow, the only person that's late will be me. Where I have my breakfast with my family, if the clock on the wall is 20 minutes slow, my family will all be late. If the person at the radio station, his watch is out by 20 minutes and he announces it on the air, all the people in the listening area will set their watches and they will all be late. If the guy in charge of the factory that pulls the horn to say that the time is over, his watch is 20 minutes out, all the factory is going to be late. If Greenwich Mean Time is 20 minutes out, the whole world will be late. You see, that's the way it is with leadership. You see, leadership, if you're just by yourself and your watch is out, you're the only one that's late.
But the moment you accept to be a leader, people are now setting their watch, their spiritual watch, by the time that you set, how you, your attitude and your, the way that you serve. And so when you take a job of serving, all of a sudden you're now living by a different standard, a higher one. And the more responsibility you take, the more important it is that you fear God and that you have spiritual depth. So how does a personal devotional life, how do they handle their family? Do they understand the scriptures? Here are a whole bunch of things. Very important. I have a statement that I put in all the job description. I'm going to talk about that soon with volunteers. That if something is not right in your life, would you please tell the leader immediately and step down for a season? We put that up front. If you are having trouble with your wife or husband, if you're going through issues, would you please tell the leader and step down? We understand. We want to help you. But when you don't put that in, they think they've got to be up here leading worship while they're going through a divorce or something. You following me? So this is smart delegation, is what I'm talking about. These are things you can do. Fear God. Next is choose. Trustworthiness. So faithfulness. So promote through faithfulness. As your church grows, and I've had churches, I pastored churches, started off 14, grew and so on. And suddenly that gets to a size where you don't know everybody anymore. Well, you don't know as a leader, you don't know everybody. But you want to give people opportunities to serve. So you need to know people that know them. Does that make sense? So you need to have a structure in place where people will be promoted through what? Through faithfulness. If they have proven trustworthy, then you promote them and you give them a newer responsibility. Okay. All right, so here we go. And then we need to appoint over tens, over fifties, over hundreds, over thousands, and so on. So what I'm suggesting here, and this is only a suggestion, I'm suggesting that your org chart could look like this. That you'd have a director and a co-director of something or other, I don't mind what. Let's say Sunday school. Shall we say Sunday school? Anyone got a better idea? Okay. You have a director, co-director, meaning that they're not working alone. You've got two people now that you can talk to. They also keep each other accountable. They keep each other encouraged, and they're doing the work together. And then you have captains. Say that their Sunday school, I don't know how big your Sunday school is, but if your Sunday school were large, you'd have to have a captain, co-captain, different. Maybe this would be junior high, and this would be, I don't know, something else. And then the team and disciples, so that there's teacher and the associate teacher. And that would be true of your ushers, too. And that would be true of your home group set up. And that would be true of your ministry to the poor. I don't know. Okay. Am I making sense, I hope? And then every 3 months, this whole team would have a barbecue at Pastor David's house. And you'd have a barbecue every 3 months. And you'd celebrate the victories. And you'd reestablish a vision. And you'd rekindle a mission. You'd introduce the new people. You'd pray for one another. You'd do new training. And everybody leaves all excited and thrilled that they're part of a ministry that's making a difference for Christ in their world. Okay. Overall here, I'm coming down to the end. You can turn to someone and say, he's coming down to the end. Hallelujah. I want to stop. Am I making any sense to you? Have I given you at least one idea that you didn't have? Yeah. Well, okay, that's good. Good question. They all have a time. Say it again. Well, the question is, how do you stop this from becoming a silo in itself? Well, one of the things we do is we put time. Remember, so this captain and co-captain will only be that for 6 months, 3 months, a year max, ever. So you can refresh this any time you like. And the whole point of this is that you want these people to go up the ladder. That's the whole point. You want these teachers to do really well, and they get to be so good that you recognize capabilities to move them up to that level, and those people up to that level. Okay. And you fight against it like mad, the silo thing.
once they've been there a certain amount of time, you maybe need to move. Maybe you need to put that in the contract. You know, you can only serve in this position for a maximum of 3 terms. I don't know.
I was thinking more about how that ministry relates to the next and the next.
Ah, very good. Oh, good, good, good. Thank you. That's brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant. Oh, of course. Oh, brilliant. Well, all those folk up at the top are part of a whole lot of these. And all of them connect to you. That's right. So you will have your 3-month barbecue with all of those guys and guyesses up at the top. Oh, I have a thing here. Oh, no, I don't. I pressed the wrong button. Okay, now I have no idea. There we go. This is meant to have a laser. And I thought it'd be really cool to... I got it. Here we go. Anyone want to be blind? Okay. I hope this is not being taped. It might get back to my therapist. Because you see, this group here are part of, depending how big the church is, of a group like this over which you're the leader. Am I making sense? So every 3 months, you will be getting together with all of them and you will be celebrating what they're doing. So they get the big picture. Then they meet with their group and they pass on what you passed on. And then these, depending on the size of it, this group can do the same with these.
But they're hearing from the other ministries that are doing other visions.
Yeah. And every so many months you have a big celebration, well, probably once a year, big celebration of everybody. And now with email and Twitter and all that, there's so many wonderful ways of keeping connected. And web pages, sites that are only accessed by code, so people can read reports of everything else that's happening in other areas. So they see, and it all comes back to the same mission and vision, everything. So that takes me to where I need to go. So this is what I'm suggesting, is that we have job descriptions for all people who serve. It's a ton of work at the front. At the front end, it's a ton of work. But once you've got it in place, it will make the ministry so exciting because people working will know what they're doing. They're going to be godly. They're going to be following Scripture. They're going to be people of prayer, people of the Bible. It's going to be exciting. So, statement of purpose. You know, what is the mission of the church? Everybody's should have the mission of the church at the top of their job description. This is what we are about. And this is what this ministry is about. And this, let's try that laser thing again. The ministry description shows how does this ministry fulfill this ministry. It's all tied to the big vision. Okay? Then the prayer goals for the ministry. Evangelism. How is Sunday school going to do evangelism? Most Sunday school teachers are not evangelists. They're wonderful people who love children. But if you want to see kids coming to Christ, you need to find a way of maybe finding an evangelist who you got in your, who is a puppet person, whatever, and every so many months you have them come through the Sunday school and give the gospel and have kids respond to Christ. But that isn't going to happen if you don't strategize, if you don't plan for it. So the evangelism will be, you know, every 6 months we present the gospel or whatever it is that you do. Discipleship, how are we going to disciple these people? What are the tangible goals for that period? Okay, so let's keep going. So, specific ministry descriptions. So you'd have, you know, what's the name of the ministry, what's the department, what's the position, who are they accountable to, who's going to be training them, what is the ministry description, what is expected of them. And then you have the qualifications. Different ministries need different qualifications. Back to that watch illustration I used earlier. You know, depending how responsible it is, more people are setting their clock by the way you live. So, you know, what are your attitude? What do you expect the attitude of a servant to be? What are the spiritual gifts needed for this particular job? What are the talents and abilities needed for this? What passion? What do they need to be members of your church to do this job or not? Maybe yes, maybe no. What are the training that they need to take before you can do this job? What are the specific job? And when do they start and when do they finish? And so on. And they have to adhere to the bylaws and tenets of the ministry or something like that. Am I making any sense? Okay. Sounds like a lot of work, doesn't it? But up front it is. But once you're in it, if you're a capable person, you're a talented person, you are thrilled if you know exactly what's expected of you And you know that you can put input, you can be creative, you can give new ideas. And that's the next session. The next session is all about creativity and fresh ideas and creative thinking. And it's going to be the fun session, which is why we're doing it after lunch. Okay, it's a fun session. Okay, so finally, when we build a team, what are the things we need to do? We need to constantly recast the vision. We need to teach on commitment and cooperation and all of these lists of things. Any final questions? Anything anyone wants to say? I hope I'm helping you. Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. In four churches. Four churches. Yes. Yeah. How do you do it? You start one ministry at a time.
Yeah, so Marina's asking, in a church our size,
yes,
how do you work through that if it's not already...
Well, you start with one ministry, whichever one you choose, and you work with, I don't know, whatever, ushers or home groups or something. Home groups, let's say. So home groups, you work it through with the leadership, and it's dialogue. You're writing this together. You know, what is it that you think we need to do in this? And you follow this general idea, this template. And once you've got it up and running and you're happy with it, then you move it to the next one. It'll take you 3 years to do this, to get it up and running. But once it's up and running, you'll find it really helpful. Like really, really. And somebody else put their hand up. At the back, yes. Hopefully your church already has one. Hopefully you know what this church is about. I'm sure you must have visions, statements, and so on. You must. It's in the bulletin every Sunday. So whatever it is, I don't know what's in the bulletin every Sunday, but so it's got evangelism in there, I'm sure, and a whole bunch of other things that are really important. Well, if those are the values of this church, then how does every ministry reflect those values? How do we contribute to making that happen? Right? That's it. Yeah.
You mentioned giving people a time limit. You'll serve.
Yes.
And then hoping that they will move up to other positions of leadership.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
You
could. If they've got the skills that you're talking about, then you're putting somebody with them all the time to learn the skills. So they are a teacher. They stay in that position, but they're getting new people to train on a regular basis. So they're not only teaching the kids, but they're also helping equip your church. Yeah. That'll do. Yeah. All right. I'm going to close with this. Can I close with this? I remember reading a story by the fellow who, Major Ian Thomas. Do you know Major Ian Thomas?
Yes.
Somebody knows. Okay. He had a wonderful story. He talked about how Moses was walking in the wilderness looking after Jethro's sheep, you might remember. And he was walking in the wilderness and suddenly there was this burning bush. Remember the burning bush story? And you remember Moses was discouraged. Moses had murdered somebody. Moses had ran away from everything. He'd been 40 years as a failure, quote unquote, looking after sheep when he was educated in Pharaoh's household, an incredibly capable man, incredibly capable leader. And here he is wasting 40 years of his life looking after sheep. And he's walking along in the desert and all of a sudden a burning bush starts. Okay. And so he goes over to the burning bush and God from the burning bush calls him to be the great leader that he becomes and changes the history of Israel. The question is this: what kind of bush did God use to talk to Moses and change the history of Israel? What kind of bush was it? Was it the best looking bush in the desert? Was it the scrawniest bush in the desert? Was it the most elegant bush in the desert or a small little shrub? What kind of bush would God use to change the history of Israel and call this man? The issue is, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that God was in the bush. As you look at each and one of us and our churches, we are not anything. But if God is in the bush, we can change the history of this community. In Jesus' name. God bless you.